On the phone with me this evening is Father Bill Sangiovanni, original member of the Shy Tones. Thanks for joining me this evening, Bill.
Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, you know, the Shy Tones are a group that maybe not a lot of people have heard of that are outside of the East Coast, but I think it had to be an exciting to be part of a group like that. Who were you listening to? What vocal groups when you first started getting interested in music?
I was very interested in all of the female groups, the Shirelles, Martha and the Vandellas. You remember all those groups that were big at the time?
Right.
I loved those groups, and we were into very much the rock and roll shows that were put on by Alan Freed and Murray the K, featuring all the artists that they, the Del Vikings, people like that. All of the groups of the 50s and early 60s, before the British sound.
So you got involved with a lot of those DJs and listening to their shows, like you mentioned, of Alan Freed and...
Absolutely.
Dr. Jive, wasn't he out there as well?
He was out there too, yeah. And a little later vintage was a Wolfman Jack. He was later.
Wolfman Jack. Not only did he start out there on the East Coast, but then he, in the later 60s and 70s, was doing something called Border Radio in Mexico, and that's kind of when I started listening to him.
Uh-huh.
What a talent he was.
Oh, yeah, he was something. Actually, and I don't remember the year on this, but we actually did a show with Murray the K. That was kind of interesting. I remember that. It was a great era of what we used to call rock and roll at that time. I guess they call it doo-wop now, but it was rock and roll to us in our area, and it was a matter of going to all these shows and these record hops, that kind of thing. That was really big then.
So how did the group start? Obviously, you had an interest in singing, but how did that come together?
That's a good question, and it's an easy answer. We were all members of a drum and bugle corps, which was sponsored by our local church, St. Bernadette's in Brooklyn, New York. We either played the bugle or the drums, every single member of the Shy, except for Fred Alvarez, who was not in it. That's how we met, and we used to just fool around and sing after drum corps rehearsal and, you know, just goofing off type of thing. Then we started to get a little bit more serious about it, and we said, you know, this doesn't sound too bad. Maybe we ought to do something with it, because we were all musicians, because we've been in drum corps for 10 years, and we decided to form this group, which would consist of singers and musicians. Don't ask me how we got the name the Shy Tones, because I know, my speaking for myself, I was far from shy, but the manager gave us that name. We had a little kind of a contest at what we should be called, and I remember we came up with names like the Gems, but there was a Gems. We came up with a name called Ridge Runners, because there's a neighborhood near us called Bay Ridge, but nobody liked that. Finally settled on the Shy Tones, which later on became, and on some of the records that you actually have referred to on your site, it says High Tones. That's the same group with a couple of personnel changes.
Well, speaking of personnel, who made up the original group of the Shy Tones?
The original Shy Tones were Al Scavuzzo, who was one of the lead singers, unfortunately died on his 21st birthday. His father was the manager of the group, Pete. He gave himself the stage name Pete Peters. And so sometimes you see the name Peters on a couple of the labels, because those were songs that were written by Al, and they used the name Peters. I stayed with the ethnic name Sangiovanni. So Al was one. Myself was a second one. Ben Passanante, he was a third. Frank Barata was a fourth. Rich Peluso was a fifth. And Freddie Alvarez was the sixth members of the Shy Tones. Those were the vocals. You know, we got together, I guess, I must have been at the time 15 or 16 years old, and I stayed in the group a couple of years until I went off to college. When I went off to college, which was 58, the group went through a couple of changes, because obviously when you lose somebody who's pretty active in the group, you have to replace them. And I remember when I first left, they got a little bit panicked because they were doing a couple of shows up in New England, and they called me and begged me if I would leave school. And in those days, you couldn't just leave campus and stuff like that, you know. I actually did go with them and did a couple of shows with them while I was a freshman in college. But that was the end of my career there, my freshman year in college.
So when you say that you were active in the group besides singing, did you play an instrument?
No, but I was, when the choreography came, I was kind of the out front dancer.
You were the lead dance man then.
Yes, it's so funny to think about what I am now and to realize, yes, I was the lead dancer. In those days, the choreography, as you remember, it was a big thing. And they always had these musical bridges in between, you know, the songs. And at that time, the group did their little routines, whether it was to the beat of a sax playing, you know, or whatever. We all had our choreography, and we worked hard at that. It was kind of neat. I didn't play an instrument in the Shy Tones, but as I say, I was in a drum and bugle corps, so I could play the horn pretty well, but not in the group.
What part of Brooklyn were you guys from then?
We're from an area that's called Diker Heights. It's between two sections that are more commonly known by people, between Bay Ridge and Bensonhurst. It's a really, really neat area of Brooklyn. It's very ethnic. You know, a lot of one and two family houses. Believe it or not, I was just down there for a funeral in September. It's even better than it was when I was a youngster. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
It's just well-preserved neighborhood, you know, tightly knit. It's the kind of a neighborhood where when you were young, your parents or your grandparents never worried about you being outside because everybody watched out for everybody else and everybody hung out on street corners. And interestingly enough, that's where a lot of the singing went on the street corners.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a false stereotype. That happened. I mean, everybody was singing on street corners.
So you were singing on the street corners. You got the group together and thought, hey, you sounded pretty good. So you must have started doing some of the hops that you were mentioning earlier.
Yep, we did a lot of record hops. And a couple of those we did for the first time, one of our new songs, like a song that I had written by the name of Annette. We released that at a record hop in our area of Brooklyn, and Annette was there, for example. It was kind of a big deal. But record hops were big then. They were really, really big. And that's where groups went to perform, at these record hops, all over the city, really. We had a lot of experience doing record hops in Brooklyn, on Long Island, that whole area.
So your first record that you released was actually called A Lover's Quarrel and Just For You.
Actually, that was not the first. The first actually was the two sides. One was White Bucks and one was Annette. That was the first. The Lover's Quarrel came after that. The songs are written by different members of the group. For example, this White Bucks was written by Al, Annette was written by me. Lover's Quarrel was written by, I believe, by Graham. He was a later member of the group. That's why I didn't give him in the initial list I gave you. But different members of the group wrote different songs. Some wrote a couple of songs. I wrote a couple. Al wrote a couple. And when the manager, who, as I say, was Al's father, thought that we were good enough to record, he made the contacts for getting the recording done and, you know, the studio and so on and so forth, which I wasn't really privy to how he did that or anything, but he did it. And obviously the records were cut and they're out there still, which has been a big shock to me. That's how I made the contact with you.
Did you ever meet Leo Rodgers, who was actually the record label owner on those?
Never did. The information that you supplied to me was very, very interesting because, I didn't really know. That was, I guess, the business end of things, and we really weren't involved with that too much, as much as the manager was. So I never knew. I might have heard the name, but I know I never met him.
What do you remember about the actual first recording itself and going in the studio?
We were so nervous. It was like, oh my God, can you believe we're doing this? It was an absolutely awesome experience. And then to us, everything sounded so much better in the studio than it did normally, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the whole thing of being in front of the mics and having somebody, you know, directing everything was like one of the most exciting experiences, I think, of our lives. Really, really was. For me, it was.
Do you recall any of the musicians that you had at those sessions?
No. Benny, the fellow who was in our group, he also played drums. So he was a drummer in the group. But in terms of some of the other musicians, no. And they brought in musicians, for example, for Lover's Quarrel, they brought in musicians for that. You'll notice this sounds like a couple of violins in that song and
mm-hmm.
a few other things. It's more of a big orchestral sound. They got existent bands to play. For backup on that. But they never traveled with us or anything. Our own group of musicians did that.
So you had the song called White Bucks that you were mentioning as your first
right.
song. And as I've noticed, it apparently was released with Annette a song that you mentioned earlier, and one called Bandstand Rock. Now, you wrote both of those, correct?
I wrote Annette and Bandstand Rock, yes.
Do you have any idea why they released that with two different flip sides?
I don't know that, because when we originally released, it was White Bucks on one side and Annette on the other. Then somehow they put out the Bandstand Rock with it, and I don't know how that happened, because that was not our original plan. White Bucks and Annette were the original idea.
And you said that Annette was at one of your hops when you introduced the record. Who was she?
Annette was a girl who lived across the street from me that I had a crush on. And I wrote the song for her. You know, she was like 15 or 16 at the time, as I was. We released the record, and she happened to be at this hop that night. So it was a really big deal. You know, they had the twirling lights ended up on her, you know. As
wow.
It was like a big, big deal, you know. I'll tell you a funny story about that. Years later, many years later, a friend of mine was riding over the George Washington Bridge going from New York to New Jersey, and he's listening to WCBS-FM, which is a rock old-time station in New York. And the DJ says, and now we're going to play an oldie but a goodie, the Chi-Tones with Annette. Well, this friend of mine is going bananas. He can't wait to get over the bridge to call the radio station. He gets over the bridge, stops the first phone booth he sees, says to the DJ, you've got to tell me where you got that record. He goes, not only is that a friend of mine, Annette is my sister.
Oh!
Yeah. The guy says, come on, you're kidding me. He goes, no, I swear to God to you. And he goes, where did you get it? He goes to him, well, I got it off the LP. He says, LP? What LP? He goes, it's an LP entitled Girls, Girls, Girls. I'll tell you where you can get it. My friend went and got the LP. I have it here to this day. And Annette is on this LP.
Wow, what an interesting experience that was.
I couldn't believe it. This is many years later, you know. Mm.
Okay, so you went in the studio, you recorded the record. Did you hear it on the radio at the time?
Yes, I did hear it up here, as a matter of fact, in Connecticut. I heard Annette up here. And I think the reason I heard it was because I was a freshman at Fairfield University here in Connecticut, and somebody got word to the station that this freshman at Fairfield U was in a group, so on and so forth. And they played this record several times at night, and of course all the kids in the college would call up and request it, you know, that kind of thing. I'll never forget the disc jockey's name was Wild Man Steve. He played the record. And Lover's Quarrel, actually, I heard on one of the big New York stations at the time, which is now an all-news station, but at the time was a big rock and roll station, WINS 1010. They played Lover's Quarrel, and as a matter of fact, it was like a pick hit of the week at one point, but we weren't able to push it any further than that. You know, at the time, they had a lot of those payola scandals going on.
Mm-hmm.
You had to pay to play.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Well, I think that explains then why that Lover's Quarrel was actually issued a couple of different times. It's kind of confusing in my mind, but it ended up not only being released on Fonska label, but also on Goodspin, and then it was ended up being distributed by Roulette. It seems like it followed a pattern of being a very small release, which Leo Rodgers normally did. He had a lot of labels, put it out on a label, and if it picked up a little bit, he might throw it on another label. And then if it picked up a little more, he had deals with some of the local big labels, and then they would go into distribution deals. So they had expected that one maybe to really take off.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
So then you went and you had recorded a couple of sets of songs. I don't think you didn't record all of those at the same session, did you?
No, they were different sessions. And then at the end, after I left the group, they did there's a song which I've seen on a couple of these sites, and I believe it was on your site too, No More Pain. I was not singing on that song. That's on a lot of these sites now. I see that, and that's No More Pain. It says the Chi-Tones, but that is the Chi-Tones.
What was the deal there? You know, you started off as the Chi-Tones, yeah. But how did it get to the Chi-Tones?
You know, I don't know. Unless somebody didn't like the name the Chi-Tones, I never understood why they switched it. They switched it after I had left, you know, when I was in college. That they started being called the Chi-Tones that next year. Whether that was done on the advice of some of these record people or what, I don't know. I thought Chi-Tones was neat myself, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the records are under the Chi-Tones, though.
White Bucks. Now, it came out in 1958, then?
Yes.
And then
57.
And Lover's Quarrel, then, was 58?
Yeah. They're all around 57, 58. I think that No More Pain might have been 59.
Hmm.
I'm not sure.
Tell me a little bit more then about some of the hops, and did you ever perform on one of the big shows?
The biggest show we ever did was with Murray the K, who was a huge DJ at the time. He had lots of, at the time, famous people with him that did shows with him, like the Dell Vikings. There was a girl at the time called Joanne Campbell. She was like the female Elvis Presley.
Mm-hmm.
They were all big names that he used to bring with him, and we did one show with him. That was the biggest thing we ever did, and it was out on the island somewhere, out on Long Island somewhere. The record hops were all localized in various neighborhoods, usually sponsored by church groups or, you know, youth groups or whatever, but they were very well attended. I mean, these things were packed.
Mm.
You know, hundreds of kids at them. You know, it wasn't like 50 kids. I mean, they were packed. So you got a good audience for your things, and it was a great experience. It really was. Great experience, and it was kind of exciting, you know, as a 16-year-old kid, you're out here doing these shows, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And especially as the lead dance man there.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
I'm talking with Father Bill, who was with the Shy Tones, original member of the Shy Tones back in Brooklyn in the later 1950s. When you had those records going and you were doing all those hops, you had to have been keeping pretty busy.
Oh, God, yes.
Especially with still being in school.
Yeah, because, you know, we were in high school at the time. And it was tough because we had a lot of rehearsals and we had to travel to do these shows and we really practiced a lot. And we were also still all in the drum corps. So we had drum corps practice sometimes one or two nights a week. Then we had Shy Tone practice the other nights of the week. Then on the weekends we had shows. You know what I mean? My mother used to get quite annoyed. But it kept us very busy and out of trouble, I might add. So maybe it was a good thing in the long run, you know?
Yeah. So when you had to say goodbye to the group then and go on to college, you said they released another couple of songs, and
yeah,
then after that, was that pretty much the end then of the Shy Tones?
Yeah, they kind of fell apart. And Al, who I was very close to in the group, again, he was also in the drum corps with us. Unfortunately, he developed bone cancer, and he died on his 21st birthday. That was a tragedy. But when he got sick, I think he got sick when he was about 19, maybe 20 at the latest. That kind of put the nail in the coffin in terms of the group, you know,
because
he had been a mainstay and his father was the manager. So it kind of everything really dissolved.
So did you keep any of your records that you made?
You know that I do not have a one except the one on the LP. I have a tape that some record dealer made for a friend of mine. This is a neat story. A friend of mine was driving somewhere in Pennsylvania and he stopped at an oldies record shop. And he just, for a goof, asked the guy, "You don't have anything by the Shy Tones, do you?" And the guy said to him, "Shy Tones, Brooklyn, New York, 1950s, I have everything." He says, "You got to be kidding me." He goes, "Can I have copies or whatever?" The guy says, "I'll make you a tape." He taped all the records, and this friend brought me that tape. And that was the only thing I had for a long time. I'm going to search some old boxes and stuff up in the attic here and see if I have any records, but I don't believe I do, except for the one on the LP.
Hmm.
You know, and then I just bought a CD called A Lighter Shade of Doo-Wop, and there's three songs on there.
Mm-hmm.
Two by the Shy Tones and one High Tone. Three out of them, that's not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So have you kept in touch at all with any of the other members of the group?
No. After Al died, it kind of was, and then I came to Connecticut to live, and everybody went on their own. I know Richie Peluso went to New Jersey. I saw him once or twice over the years, and he has a cousin that lives in this town, and I keep informed of him. Freddie Alvarez I lost contact with. I was in touch with him, though, for a few years afterward. He was the bass singer in the group. He was an awesome voice. But everybody kind of went their own way and left and went to other areas and so forth, you know?
Hmm.
So we lost contact.
You probably never did see any money off the actual records themselves.
No, not really. Hmm. Nope. But we saw, you know, from the shows and stuff like that, we'd get some money. But that all went back into equipment and outfits. And we had a winter outfit and a summer outfit. The one that you have there is our winter, our black and silver. Oh, Lord, I can't believe it. It's funny because it seems like ancient history, but yet, you know, I kind of smile to myself because I think, you know, I'm surrounded with, you know, hundreds of teenagers every day, and I look at them and I say, "Oh boy, if you ever knew." You know, you think you know about rock and roll, guess what?
Well, actually, That's a good segue into me asking you what it is that you're doing now. I know that some people probably have a pretty good idea when I introduced you as Father Bill, but why don't you give us some details?
Okay. I'm principal of a high school here in Fairfield, Connecticut, a co-ed high school, grades 9 through 12. It's called Notre Dame High School. And I've been there 25 years, but it's my 12th year as principal, but I had a lot of other positions in the school before that. I still teach one class. I teach in AP groups of seniors in American government. I love the school. As I say, I've been there 25 years, and, you know, it's where I should be. I've really been happy there. It's a great place. We have a great spirit there. The kids are a lot of fun, you know, and if any of them ever sees this on your website... I'm ruined. I'm only kidding. I think it would be a big goof, though. It would be fun.
Well, I've been speaking with Father Bill tonight during the show. He was an original member of the Shy Tones. Anything that I may have missed, Father Bill?
No, except that I think that, you know, I mean, this is just a philosophical observation. I think life back then was a lot more simple, and I think that you could tell that by listening to the music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, we were, you know, we were always happy. I mean, we really were. You know, I know that sounds like a cliche, but it just seems like, you know, now I've given my whole life working with kids, and I just feel that I seem to have had it a lot easier in terms of the world in which I lived than the world in which they live. Maybe that's just my own feeling. I don't know, you know. But I do think that a case can be made for that. You know, the 50s, and I'm not saying there weren't problems. Of course there were problems. You know, there's always problems. Human nature is human nature. But I think that life was less complicated than it is today. Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a lot of fun on those street corners, and nobody was shooting anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a lot different. I mean, today, people see a bunch of kids on the street corner, they panic. That's where we used to hang. We would be there, and you know, nobody would... worry about us because they knew it was okay. You know, nobody, it was okay. Everybody knew each other. That old neighborhood concept where people watched out for each other. They really did. I think that's the essence of a true neighborhood. And I loved it. I loved being born and raised there. I thought it was a great gift. When I was 17, I came up here to Connecticut. I mean, I love Connecticut. It's not the point. But it was so tightly knit and so cohesive there in that neighborhood. When I go back, my juices get flowing again to walk around there. It really does. And like in September, I was down there for a wake and a funeral, and I just had to take a time to walk around. And I just felt it all over again, you know?
Mm.
It's kind of neat. Yeah. Very, very neat. If you've experienced it, or I'm sure some of you people may have experienced it, they know exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with Father Bill Sangiovanni, original member of the Shy Tones. And Father Bill, thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Thank you, Brian. I'm really glad that I had the opportunity to meet you kind of by accident, really. But now I feel, you know, I have a friend out there.
Absolutely.
So we'll continue to be in touch, I hope.
We'll definitely do that.